Mini episode 1925 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1925. You have with you here today FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and Simon Applebaum. And it is always a treat to be able to get Simon on the show. You can check out his great podcast and column. Tomorrow will be televised, and it is a long-running podcast that he has going. It's been, I think, on the air for just about as long as this show has been. And the great column through Media Village as well. You can always check and see what he's got going on. Today, we are here to recap the 2026 upfronts. Simon just ran through the cycle of them in New York, all of the big events there. And of course, if you were reading his column like I was, you'd be able to see everything that was happening there and get his thoughts on them. And we will have him elaborate today. So, Simon, always a pleasure to get you on the show to talk about these things. Thank you so much for being here, my friend.
It's a pleasure, Rick. And by the way, we're now in year 19, and all things willing, tomorrow will be televised, which, by the way, is carried live on Mondays and Fridays, other days too, at 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, on TalkShoe, Facebook, and YouTube. We will start our 20th year, first Monday of August. It's been an amazing run. And we're now, by the way, we're also carried on 44 podcast platforms as well, from Amazon Music to Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, YouTube Music, and many other great ones.
44. Okay. You've got us beat. We're somewhere in the 20s. But when you make it to either one of those points, I think you can say wherever you get your podcasts. Right, Simon?
Right. Absolutely. And I'm also, by the way, since last time, I'm now in my third year of doing a once a week commentary on the TV side of sports on Sports Newswire, the daily news information show. It's on a noon Eastern, 90 Pacific on the Sports Grid Network, which is available on your favorite smart TV set or device, also on bundles such as Free Live Sports and Local Now.
Yes, I know that you've got that going on with the sports coverage as well. And may I say that with a lot of your audience and a lot of your guests and everything like that being in the New York City area, I realize that I am the resident heel to that particular world for the next 2 weeks as a lifelong fan of my beloved Cleveland Cavaliers. So the Eastern Conference Finals starting tomorrow night on ESPN. And so it'll be a clash of the worlds here. Between the franchises. But, you know, I guess I should probably start on that sports note here that when you went to the Disney upfront, unsurprisingly, they're billboarding left and right about this being the first ESPN Super Bowl. So ESPN/ABC/ I think it's probably going to be one of their multiverse deals where I'm sure Pat McAfee is going to have his slice of it and some of the other different options that will be out there. So Disney, you know, between that and some of the other sports ventures that they've had going on, I know that was very much predominant when you were there, but also with them highlighting some Hulu properties as well.
And some FX as well. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the very few where you had a new player, as far as an executive goes, was there, Josh D'Amaro, the new head of Disney. Mm-hmm. It was a Lollapalooza of an event. You had all sorts of major, like over 100 celebrities there. You had Jimmy Kimmel with his latest monologue on the state of the TV industry. He had his daughter, Jane, introduce Olivia Rodrigo, who made a fantastic concert and then brought in one of the great unscripted moments of the entire upfront week last week here in NYC. Daughter Jane got up on the stage and she sang a chorus of one of Olivia's songs and then did this whole prancing around with her. It was captured 360 by the camera. It was an amazing moment. Overall, I think there were a couple of themes that came out of the upfronts. One is that we are at a time where it's no longer a linear broadcast or cable network that gets the details. It's the mega content service. It's Disney Plus and Hulu. It's Amazon with Prime Video. It's Netflix, of course. It is NBCU and Peacock. It's Warner Bros. Discovery, even with HBO Max. and maybe down the road an HBO Max combo with Paramount Plus. The mega content service is where it's at. That's where the dollars are. That's where the viewers are going, because we're at a time when it comes to viewing television, according to the Nielsen Monthly Gauge study, nearly half of all the viewing is smart TV sets and smart TV devices, and a lot of that is captured by services like Prime Video and Netflix and YouTube, which now has about 13-14% of all the viewing every month. That's what is really grabbing the ad public and the press public in terms of dollars. Another, I think, very important area of this upfront and the new front process, and it's one that, frankly, the upfronts, I think, lost an advantage to talk about, is that we are now, Rick, in a brand new era of television. We've talked for years about interactive TV. It's finally happening. We are seeing people get adjusted to an era of people using television, not just watching TV. They use their voice. They use their remote control. They use an artificial intelligence feature like Alexa Plus from Amazon, like Google's Gemini, like Microsoft's Copilot, like Perplexity. YouTube now has a feature where you can have a conversation with a YouTube program and you can get the information you want, a question answered, and have it on the screen without pausing the program. And at YouTube's event, by the way, at David Geffen Hall last Wednesday, they even introduced a new feature, which is going to be introduced soon, where if you want to watch an ad on YouTube and you want to buy the product that's, or the service in the ad, you will be able to do that with your voice and your voice remote and probably a form of Gemini. Anywhere you get YouTube on your smart TV set. We are in this era. I do think, though, that it was downplayed by a lot of people. I thought Josh DeMar, who said that he wanted Disney Plus to be the centerpiece of Disney, didn't say much about it. I thought it was a missed opportunity. Amazon had Alexa Plus, but they didn't talk about how Alexa Plus is doing with smart TV sets and smart TV devices. So I think this is something that hopefully next time around with these upfronts a year from now, we will have a lot more say about. But frankly, I think this is something that we as journalists have to talk about. People are being empowered to do this. This is going to impact a lot of industries, not just TV, but the retail industry, the travel industry, the sports industry, the hospitality industry, and everybody else. And we've got to start covering this because people are getting this ability for the last 8 or 9 months, and they're going to use it. If they feel empowered by it, this is going to fly and fly very, very fast.
Yes, and I have to say, again, the matter of perspective on this as far as the move to the ultra-modern form of entertainment, having had you on the show since, I think, 2010, I remember that somewhere around 2020 that I said to you that, like, gee, I kind of thought by the end of the decade it would be all more integrated than it has been. So it's been, you know, one kind of step at a time here over in the course of the 16 years that we've been having you on. But by the same token, I have to say, again, as somebody who again picked up a short-term subscription to Prime right before the NBA playoffs started, so I didn't miss any Cavs games. It's a thing where to watch Game 7 of the Eastern Conference semifinals last night on Prime, boy, that would have been unheard of not too long ago. The moves that have been made, the aggressive moves in the last 3 or 4 years with major sports leagues into streaming is something that, again, you go back in time and it would have been unheard of for it to have been on a platform like that. So in some ways, it feels like over the course of the 16 years we've been having you on that it's moving very slowly. And on the other hand, I look at guideposts like last night seeing the game on Prime and I think, well, it really is kind of picking up steam here and really moving ahead at the pace you're talking about.
And Rick, Prime has built up over the last couple of years a very unique portfolio of sports programming. Thursday Night Football, which the viewership continues to grow and grow and grow. You just mentioned the NBA, which they just wrapped up, which, by the way, also had a bet tracking situation where if you placed a bet on FanDuel, you could track it through your smart television set. And in addition to that, the WNBA now coming up. They have other sports in the hopper. They've got the Skins game. They got the Black Friday situation where it's Skins game, golf in the morning, and then pro and college football in the afternoon or in the evening. And now you have Netflix, which has expanded its lineup of NFL coverage. It started with the two Christmas Day games. Now this coming just this year alone, it's going to be a Week 1 game, a Thanksgiving Eve game, a Week 18 game, the NFL honors right before the Super Bowl. Next winter, and of course, two Christmas Day games this year, then one afterward. So you have a deeper relationship with the NFL. I thought the YouTube was the loser because there was talk that either Netflix or YouTube was going to get a 4 or 5 game package. Turned out it was Netflix. Yep. And we're seeing more and more of these situations where more and more sports are going on these mega content services and on places like Tubi. For example, when the World Cup happens next year on Fox, at least two of the matches will be simulcast on Tubi, along with the opening ceremonies. And I would think also the new halftime show with and the final game with Madonna, Shakira, and BTS is going to be also a Tubi attraction. So now you have Tubi, you have Roku now with a sports channel. They're now carrying the new X Games League. So you have sports zones now on practically every smart TV set. You have Zumo now getting in with sports coverage, the Comcast Charter bundle. So it's becoming more and more of a time. Don't forget, when you're watching an NFL game on Sunday afternoon, if you're watching on CBS, on Paramount Plus, if you're watching on Fox, it's on Tubi or Hulu or someplace else. If you're watching ABC, it's Disney Plus or the ESPN Mega Content Service. So we are now more and more getting used to the fact that through our smart TV set, we're going to see more and more and more events.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Paramount Plus a second ago there in terms of the upfront that and you had an excellent column, as all of these were, really. But the one about Warner Brothers Discovery, that it was sort of, you know, bidding farewell to that. By this time next year, that will be a memory, because they'll be merged in fully to the Paramount family with this merger that's going on. And I think you had mentioned just in passing earlier, probably Paramount Plus and HBO Max coming together. That makes the most sense, because they're both really sort of redundant as standalone entities. And you're starting to see that a little bit as well, too, that the process of Hulu being subsumed into Disney Plus, that just makes sense. Why would you need to have two different streaming services? Disney's already got the ESPN thing there, so they don't need like three streaming services to have. But as far as Paramount and everything that's happening, that's probably, I would say, the dominant media story of 2026, with them subsuming this large pie of Warner Brothers Discovery. And again, like you said in your column here, just kind of an excellent kind of way to wrap it up for them, something that we'll look back upon as their last go-round as an independent entity before being subsumed.
And you know, Rick, of all the upfronts I went to last week, Warner Brothers Discovery at Madison Square Garden was the weirdest. It was a very weird vibe. Everybody was wondering going in, how is Warner Brothers going to take this situation with Paramount Plus? To be fair, and I know that the Hollywood Reporter and some other places really cracked down on Warner Brothers Discovery. The folks at the Hollywood Reporter called it a wake. Other people were gave it even worse reviews. And I get that. I get why. I get that they were on a tightrope. The tightrope is, what can you say for the people that were there, and what you can't say, which is, you know, we can't say enough about what's going to happen when we become part of Paramount Plus. And I also think that they had good criticism in terms of the fact that David Zaslav, the head of Warner Bros. Discovery, and Casey Bloys, the head promo at HBO, were not there. They should have been there, at least to say to their advertising, thank you for supporting us all these years. Thank you for making us who we are so that we can be acquired by Paramount Plus. I think they should have had around, you know, to say to the public that was there, hey, we're still going to be around as much as we can until we get married with Paramount Plus. There were some things they could announce. They did. They had a great Ted Turner salute. I mean, Ted Turner is the visionary that got Warner Bros. Discovery to where it is because of his brilliance of putting together services like TNT and TBS and CNN and Cartoon Network and Adult Swim and the Goodwill Games and so on and so forth. And I thought that the way they handled it with Ted Turner at the beginning, you see the tape of him dedicating CNN June 1st, 1980, when it went on the air and still is, and Anderson Cooper coming on afterward to say just a few words about Ted being the visionary he is. I thought it was a wonderful way to go. And I thought they got lost in the shuffle. It's too bad. And again, it's too bad that the leaders of Warner Bros. Discovery couldn't take a final bow and say to the to the public that was at MSG, we can always say we can say, and we're going to still be your friend and still work with you to make, you know, the best things happen for you and for the people watching our programming until we get to Paramount Plus. I do think, though, that Paramount Plus has to learn a lesson here, which is you have got to start talking. You may not want to do an upfront event, but you better do a press conference. You better do a press event. You better come on shows like mine and to say to the public, here's what we're doing. Here's where we're going. Here's how we're going to deal with this new era of using television. Here's where we're going to take Paramount Plus. Here's where we're going to take Pluto TV. I'd love to have Cindy Holland on, the former Netflix key programmer, because she's in charge now of what Paramount Plus is going to do. And one of the things Paramount Plus is going to have to deal with is you got to make more content. because Netflix is doing it, and Prime Video is doing it, and Disney Plus is doing it, and everybody else is. We are no longer in the area of non-peak TV or non-plentiful TV. We are in a plentiful TV area. And let's not forget, too, another thing about this whole upfront, newfront process is we are in an era where YouTube and social media content makers are getting more ambitious, and they're creating channels and they're creating shows for the likes of a Netflix, for Paramount Plus, for a Tubi, for a Roku channel, and so on and so forth. So Paramount Plus, you got to get into this era and you've got to talk. And I think one of the issues why Paramount is in this issue is, and why I think their cable networks have taken a hit, like Nickelodeon and Comedy Central and so forth, because they don't talk publicly. They only talk to the advertisers. That's got to stop.
That's a very good point there. And I want to ask you, there was a prediction that I made about Paramount post-merger on the show recently. And this is completely unsourced. This is just me guessing off the top of my head, looking at the landscape. So to back up for a second here, the last time we had you on the show was part of, we've been doing this recurring mini series on the show since about 2020 with myself and fellow FDH Lounge dignitary, Ben Chu. And we'd had you in for one of those discussions as far as the state of the streaming industry and changes that are happening there. Ben and I just did another one of those segments recently, and we were looking at, in large part, the Paramount situation with Warner Brothers. And I just kind of blurted out at one point, I said, I have a prediction to make. I think that what they're going to want to do, with the landscape being what it is, with the importance of, you're going to have this now gigantic merged CBS Sports, TNT Sports kind of a deal. My guess is they flip one of these many channels, which may be redundant under the merger, and make that the CBS Sports Network. That's my guess. Is you take a channel that's in a lot more homes right now, and you move CBS Sports Network to there to try to make it a bigger entity. I don't know what you do with the remaining CBS Sports Network. Maybe it's CBS Sports Network 2. Maybe you get rid of it, whatever the case may be. That's just a guess off the top of my head looking at the industry here, Simon. What do you think the odds are of something like that playing out?
Very good. I think what's going to happen is, in addition to Paramount Plus and HBO Max merging, I think you'll see CBS Sports and TNT Sports merge. I think they'll come up with a mega content service. I think they'll throw in CBS Sports Network, CBS Sports HQ, the Golazo Soccer Channel. I think they should also do a Spanish language service, because a lot of their programming is not done in Spanish language television. They need to get it on that, particularly the NFL, March Madness, etc. Still one of the biggest events that is currently not with a Spanish language equivalent. I think it would work very, very well. And I think it would put TNT, and I think a combined service would put them in better shape when it comes to this whole area of sports, you know, going more and more toward streaming through as I should say, mega content playing through smart TV sets and smart TV devices. So I agree with you. I think there's going to be some merging. I also think Pluto TV is going to have more of a sports presence than it currently does now. Just like Tubi is getting it, just like Roku channel is getting it, like Zumo is getting it also. And also one other thing too, that was very interesting about all these upfronts, not one upfront talked about America's 250th birthday, which is going to be a huge, I mean, huge opportunity for advertising, for content. Even Disney, which has been saying we're going to do this 24-hour celebration live coast to coast, you know, from midnight to midnight, nothing to say about it. CNN had nothing to say about it. Prime Video had nothing to say about it. Disney had nothing to say again. CNN had nothing to say in their segment. Why? This is a big deal. And you can do so well with advertising the public by showcasing. Even Fox did not talk about it. You know, and you would think that with Fox News Channel and Fox Business Network, that they, you know, and Fox Broadcasting, that they could do something. Even Televisa Univision, although they did say in a press release afterward, they are going to carry live ceremonies from Washington, activity from Washington, D.C. on July 4th. That really surprised me that, you know, you don't get a 250th birthday of this country any year. And I remember back in 1976, you had ABC, CBS, NBC, the three broadcasts at the time, you know, go all out and do an incredible job in terms of showcasing the breadth and depth of how people were celebrating that specific celebration.
It really was a year-long lead-up back in the day. Yeah, it is strange that this is something where culturally it almost seems to be sneaking up on us, because you've got that. I know that, it's noteworthy in today's culture that one of the most visible markers of it is that on Flag Day slash the president's birthday, they're going to have the big UFC thing out by the White House front lawn there. I guess they're building a temporary arena by Lafayette Square is what I guess I heard recently. But yeah, I mean, outside of that, you're not hearing a lot about it. And that really, really is strange. As far as we were talking about with Paramount and about how they're going to treat sports going forward, because again, as pretty much the last bastion of live programming in this country, and one of the things that makes it the most lucrative in terms of broadcast rights, when you look at NBC, when you look at Peacock, you started to see a little bit here. I mean, it was a little bit of a lame duck thing during the Winter Olympics. Like, you could still go to USA Network for it. That's probably the last time that's going to happen. Anything that's going to Versant is probably not going to be part of the 2028 games. But Peacock, the last couple of times through, I mean, you go back to Paris in 2024, how just completely and utterly comprehensive it's been. And I guess you could say that even about previous Olympic games as well, but how that is really sort of, you know, standing in the breach here as far as like what some of the cable channels might be otherwise. Now, I know that the NBC has brought back the NBC Sports Network, but the distribution on that is still not the widest. I mean, my cable system doesn't carry it anymore when they'd carried NBC Sports Network all the way through previously. But what really caught my eye when you were writing about the NBC upfront was this is a thing where in today's culture, looking at the different verses out there, like the Fast and Furious verse, as it were, here, that for Peacock to get a show, and possibly, I think you said, up to four shows based on that, like that's the way to hook people in. If you can find a big fan base like that, so it's a very smart move for them. Again, assuming that they can make it work budgetarily, I'm guessing it's not going to be any of the big stars from the movie. You're going to have whatever special effects costs and whatever. But I was really intrigued when I read that in your column there because it seems smart. It does seem like trying to hook in big core fan bases like that is a way to really help build your service, which I know Peacock is still, I won't say desperately trying to do, but let's say urgently trying to do.
You got that right, Rick. And I'll tell you, that announcement got botched. And it's unfortunate because it's a great move. I think it's a great move to do Fast and the Furious on television. It hasn't been talked about at all, which is really shocking, until Vin Diesel got on that stage at Racing Music Hall and blurred the announcement out. The problem was the announcement was not totally there. When I went to an NBC Universal press event, which, by the way, was a great move on NBC Universal's part. It was well attended. It was, you had to leave Fox early to go there and then have to head out early from that to go to Amazon's thing because it was so, you know, tightly packed. But when I went there, what I learned was, no, we don't have four shows that we're doing. We're only going to do one. Then more reporting comes out. As it turns out, this is where it stands. Peacock may do up to four. One is definitely going to happen. There are three others in active development. This is like what HBO does with Game of Thrones, you know, spinoffs. They assign a showrunner team, a production team. They see what they come up with as a pilot possibility, a proposal, or even a finished pilot, and then they make the call. I have a hunch that's what's going to happen here. It's a shame because this was a great announcement. It was, but it was botched in terms of that Diesel may have bitten off more than he could speak, or he did speak with that. However, there was another announcement that should have gotten a lot more attention, and it was handled, I think, the right way, which is that Mark Anthony, the global music superstar, is going to do a huge deal with Televisa Univision. Luckily, just he stopped short of saying specifics, but he did suggest that it would be original content IP, possibly some stuff in fashion and lifestyle, artist representation. We'll find more in a couple weeks. But that is huge because there's one thing that Spanish language television needs to do more of. It's produce original content in the United States, especially scripted content. I'm not saying, you know, don't do shows in Mexico, don't do shows in Spain, but it's high time that given the talent pool that we have here in the United States, of Latino writers, producers, directors, actors, etc., we have more physical production space than ever before, and more is being put together in major Hispanic markets like New York, New Jersey, Miami and Florida, Texas, Albuquerque, New Mexico, Denver, California, etc., and more advertiser interest. And of course, the Hispanic population keeps growing. There's no excuse anymore to not do shows here. And I think what Mark Anthony is going to do could very well be a big changeover. That's the way that Television Division is counting it. I thought it should have had a lot more attention than it got. It, for me, was one of the top big announcements, along with what happened on Monday night with the big deal with Michael B. Jordan and the three shows he's doing for Amazon, for Prime Video. And by the way, one thing about Prime Video that they're becoming a trendsetter in, Rick, is scripted sports television shows. There was a time when if you did a scripted TV show about sports, college, high school, pro, it was kiss of death. Remember Jim Bouton, Ball Four, becoming a sitcom. Bouton was part of it. It was taped at the CBS Broadcast Center here in New York on 57th Street. Yeah. Gone after four episodes. There was The League of Their Own, tried twice, both bombed. You had Breaking Away. Great version of that movie. Produced by Herbie Lynn and Peter Yates on ABC. Was stuck at Saturday at 8 o'clock. Great show. Well-produced. Gone after seven episodes. And, you know, on and on and on and on. But now with the success of Ted Lasso, and particularly this year with shows like Finding Her Edge, I think it's getting drama on Netflix, Heated Rivalry, the hockey drama on HBO and HBO Max. You're seeing more and more of these shows getting a running point on Netflix. You're seeing more and more of these shows getting green-lighted, like The Hawk. That's the Will Ferrell golf comedy, drama. It's going to be showing starting in July. You've got Thunder Road and Point Break coming up from AMC. And you also now have these two shows from Michael B. Jordan, The Greatest Muhammad Ali boxing miniseries with this terrific actor playing Muhammad Ali. This could be one of the big shows of the fall, could be a possible Emmy contender next year for both the series and for this actor's performance as Ali, and the Creed boxing offshoot Delphi, which will be coming out next year. So I think you're going to see more and more of these scripted sports shows come on all over the place.
Those are all very noteworthy, and I know you're speaking predominantly of dramas there. If we're casting the net a bit wider, I will say, as a ginormous fan of Shorzy on Hulu, and of course Crave in Canada, I would lump that in as well. Great hockey comedy as well, and that's where I wonder about this, because, again, for a period of time, like you said, it was a little bit hard to, I mean, you'd get the occasional thing, and I guess maybe probably, as I think about it, more so in the comedy genre as far as Eastbound and Down back in the 2010s.
White Shadow, Burst in 10.
Yeah, that's, you know, White Shadow. I mean, you have to go back to my childhood, but yes, that would be, there's that one there, and it's like, part of me kind of wonders, like, is there the sense of, like, when you're getting into, like, the actual game action, you know, like, you've got to have a certain amount of that in some of these shows here. If they felt that was a little bit jarring to kind of film and make it look real or whatever, like, I wonder why there was a period of time on some of these ones here where you weren't finding that as much, because, like you said, it is a noteworthy comeback to start seeing more of this happen. I mean, I know why Playmakers went off the air with the ESPN in the early 2000s, because Roger Goodell, or actually it was Tagliabue at the time, Tagliabue didn't like it, but
it was a hit, by the way, for ESPN when they were getting into original scripted shows. It was a hit.
It was.
And it was the NFL that basically said, no, you can't show, you're giving it, putting us in a bad light. And so ESPN capitulated and took it off the air. Yeah. And they haven't done much scripted stuff since. And they should think about maybe getting back into the scripted game, because it's so widespread. You got all these sports to deal with. I think also you have now this whole incredible move into women's sports. And also, let's not forget, you have a company like Verily Storybrooks that's going to be coming on next year with a multi-season series on Jim Thorpe, which has the blessing of the Thorpe family. And I think that could really do very well.
Yeah, that's going to be fascinating. That for all of the different angles that there were to that guy's life, just on the sports end alone, the number of different sports that he was involved in dominating and the other facets of his life. Yes, Jim Thorpe, it kind of makes you wonder why that hasn't been tackled in a big way previously. So, yes, there's a lot that remains out there to be mined for content effectively by these entities. And again, with all the different, like you said before, the big platforms out there and all the other entities that are looking for programming, it's not a surprise that you're seeing a lot of them go in this direction. So, In the aftermath of the upfronts happening, looking at the landscape here, mid to late May 2026 and heading into a fall season where, again, predominantly we've been moving since pandemic time, less scripted dramas, less sitcoms. The networks found out that they could make it with less of that kind of stuff that really, really costs money. What's your sort of overall state of the biz coming out of this and where you feel like things are at this moment in time heading into the fall?
Well, I think things for the mega content services is going to get better because most of them making a profit. The only one that isn't is Peacock, and probably because of the NBA deal that they got with NBC, where everybody had to pay like $2.5 billion a year over the course of the contract. Otherwise, Peacock would be profitable. And now that most of these services are profitable, it now allows them some flexibility to create more programming. You look at Netflix. They have not let the inability to get Warner Brothers go to their heads. They are still, you know, bashing out there. They're getting more and more new shows. They're trying more and more things. They're doing some interactivity now. I think that's going to increase, particularly with the possible interactive ads. They are willing to keep the envelope going. And the same thing, I think, with Prime Video. And I think it's going to, and it has to catch on, I think, with Paramount Plus and HBO Max, given, you know, what they've got in the fire coming up and all the franchises that Paramount Plus can now take over. And you got the Duffer Brothers also with Paramount Plus. And you have, as I said, Cindy Holland, who is a terrific programmer. So I think that that's going to be great. I think the interesting thing to watch out for is what Samsung and LG and Vizio under Walmart and Tele and all these other smart TV sets are going to do, because they're getting more ambitious. They're going to be taking more of these channels and more of these shows by individual YouTube and social media content. We now have a channel called Creator TV, which is original scripted and scripted shows. And some sports programming too, like pickleball, like celebrity social media pickleball by some of these social media stars. There's video podcast networks. I think video podcasts has become a very, very big thing. It's starting to be on Netflix. It's starting to be in other places too. We just got word that Chris Hardwick is going to come back on television with his first show since The Wall, with a new AMC version of his current podcast that'll start this fall. So I think you see more video podcasts. You're going to see more original shows, more YouTuber talent. You're also going to see more independently made scripted television shows get made. They won't wait for a green light from anybody. They'll make 8-10 episodes, half hour hours, and then they'll get the green light. And they've got a lot of places they can go to. So you're going to see more and more of these scripted TV shows that are made independently. They get funding different ways, whether it's through Kickstarter or Indiegogo or Seed and Spark, or they get some sort of private equity backing, or they go to a new platform like Waterfall or Verily Storyworks to get going. And I think you'll see that really start to move up, especially as we see more film and TV festivals get started. I would love to see still the New York TV Festival get back. And so I would say to the to Mayor Mondami's Mayor's Office of Entertainment, get off your behind and start getting the New York TV Festival back, because you're really under the gun, and you're not keeping up with what everybody else is doing.
That is a very good point there. And one follow-up thing that came to mind as you were talking is that it occurred to me that we've not really discussed here tonight. And I understand that this is, they're probably walking on eggshells, all of the decision makers at these things here, because of the Screen Actors Guild and some of the other ramifications here. But was there any kind of sense at any of these places of anybody talking about, hey, we're starting to move into AI a little bit more, and you might start to see more, some of that type of, you know, especially in the scripted programming areas? I know that that's really touchy, but like, was there any kind of hint from any of them that like we're starting to move into these areas?
Yes, Canela Media. Okay. Spanish language service. They are going all in on AI, and with both with advertising, with their rewards program, Club Canela, which uses a game show host that's fashioned with AI. And I think you're going to see them really get into it. I think microdramas, which I think will end up also being half hour episodes on a weekly basis, use AI. I think the AI is looking better and better and better, both live action and animation. And I think you're going to, and we all now, by the way, have two channels that feature AI-generated content. One is Escape.ai by John Gaeta, the Oscar-winning designer of the Matrix movies. The other one is Fairground. Colin Pichonor has been on our show two times. They just started. They're now running on, by the way, Escape AI is running on Samsung. They're running on LG. They're running on the Roku channel. They're running on Amazon Fire TV. And I think we'll see more attempts to do channels that feature original content, scripted, unscripted, live-action, animated games, and interactive programming that use AI to some degree. I think the tech is getting better, the tools are getting better, and more importantly, they are relaying this message. Yes, AI is going to be a way we can get shows on, as well as made-for-TV movies on, with in quicker time, but with higher quality. But at the same time, it's we, the human beings, that are controlling the action here. It's we, the human beings, that are creating the creative, emotional spark to the content. And that's the way it's going to stay. And by the way, one other thing too, about we're not going to have strikes. There was no picketing at any of the upfronts I went to. The Writers Guild has a deal. The Screen Actors Guild after has a deal. Directors Guild is now in negotiations. I think they'll get a deal very quickly. So I think by the end of this month. And by the way, there's a 4-year deals. So it's not 3-year anymore. It's 4-year deals. Okay. And it looks like that the guilds are happy with where they see AI going, because more and more of their membership is seeing AI as a tool, not as a job takeover.
Interesting, because somebody that I follow on Twitter – the excellent actress Justine Bateman. I know she's really kind of a militant on the subject here. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, she's not going to be happy to hear some of the things that we're discussing here as far as the progress that's being made with it. But you're saying that the rank and file is more comfortable with it perhaps than she is?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And you got Netflix now, which is now they bought Ben Affleck's production company, which is all about AI. Mm-hmm. And they also have just started an AI animation studio that's going to do short form programming. And some people are already speculating that this could be Netflix's big move into AI long-form programming, or they could use the shorts as a pilot program for a possible new series.
Sure. Wow. Okay. Well, yeah, just the evolution of this is fascinating, because everything that you just said in the last couple of minutes indicates to me that it's further along than I thought it was, and probably, frankly, most of our audience as well. So, yeah, so the advancements that are being made are stunning.
Absolutely, Rick. And again, I got to go back to this whole thing about people using television, because it is Alexa Plus, it is Google Gemini, it's YouTube with this conversational AI feature that is really driving the activity. And the more people are being empowered to do everything from plan their day, maneuver their features of their smart home or smart apartment, whether it is to set up their next appointment with their life coach or their doctor or their dentist or their pharmacist, whether it is to ultimately play sports bets as well as track bets, whether it is to book restaurants and hotels and travel and get tickets to all sorts of events. The more and more we see it, and even now delivering, if you have Alexa Plus, you can now order delivery food on Grubhub or Uber Eats. And we just found out that they're now doing a shopping thing. It's not on Amazon Fire TV yet with Alexa Plus, but it is on if you have an Echo device. You can now do shopping in a big, big, fast way. So we're seeing these developments really take place. And there has to be a lot of talk in the advertising industry, in the retail industry, all the other. We've got to start talking about this, and we've got to have public discussion about how do we deal with this new consumer behavior. Because this is like smart TV sets. 10 years ago, smart TV sets were nowhere. And by the way, nobody was talking it up. Journalists weren't talking it up. The smart TV set makers weren't doing advertising. And now 90% of all U.S. households have smart TV sets. And I think this is going to be the same thing with this usage of AI and voice and remote control. And we better start talking about this. And it's got to become, I think, job one in every conference that is taking place. By the way, next week we have an Angelic Web conference in the Interactive Ad Bureau's Tech Lab. One of the key people for Plexi is going to be there, Jennifer Chen. I hope that they flip the switch and not talk about it for the web, but talk about it for television. We've got to have this debate. We've got to have this discussion so that everybody's up to speed about how this is going to impact the rest of this decade and beyond.
Yes, and I'm going to back you up on what you just said there as far as, again, where this was a decade or so ago. And as I said, it's been 16 years tracking this with you here on the show. And check the receipts, ladies and gentlemen, because all along the line, as Simon has been saying for years, where the decision makers have been slow on pushing this and pushing that. So you've always been ahead of the curve on these different things here. And, you know, and I'm reminded when you were talking about Alexa before, two of the finer uses, I believe, that you can have for Alexa would be bringing up perhaps the latest episode of the FDH Lounge and perhaps the latest episode of Tomorrow Will Be Televised. So you can, I'm sure, use it to do that.
And the latest episode of Sports News Wire also.
Sports News Wire.
And the latest comms at Media Village. So by the way, all my comms, incidentally, about this year's upfronts are going to be at MediaVillage.com. And by the way, Jack this morning, Jack Myers, who's the head of Media Village and also is doing this stuff on Substack, did a wonderful column that sort of put his spin on what I did and his thoughts also about the upfronts. By the way, he was on my show along with Tim Spengler. They do a wonderful podcast that you can get on Media Village and Substack. Called Lead Human. And Jack, when he was on, when I asked him for a prediction, he believes that OpenAI is going to get into this game, that OpenAI is going to become, like Alexa Plus and Gemini and so forth, a big thing for people to use through their smart TV set and device. He thinks something like a form of ChatGPT or something is going to be part of OpenAI's ball game.
Well, that's a real clip and save. Yeah, because Jack's a very smart guy. He's got a great site there with Media Village that you and a number of other smart folks are a big part of. So, yeah, if he says it, you've got my attention anytime that's the case. And, yeah, that is that's kind of a blockbuster right there as well. So, yeah, just – You know, as has been the case, since we've had you on, really, I mean, it never stops, Simon, that it's always a moment where there's all these things that are changing and evolving because of this hinge moment that we live in history where, you know, when we're old and gray, I guess we'll see sort of the culmination of a lot of this kind of stuff. But we are in this in-between period as it's all evolving.
It is definitely an inflection point, Rick. And by the way, because we have both upfronts and new fronts done, I do want to say this. I thought in terms of the new fronts. Samsung was amazing. LG should have opened itself to the press. And the same thing with Tubi. And the big disappointment was two disappointments. One was that Vizio did not say much with Walmart. We really thought they were going to finally, open the door, get the starting gun off on their effort with interactivity. They didn't. Hopefully we'll hear soon. And Telly, which I hear a lot of people now getting those sets. That's the dual screen set, 2/3 the picture, 1/3 is the interactive material. I hear they're doing very, very well. And I wish they would come out of the closet and say more about what they've got coming up. And we don't know yet if they're going to, by the way, bring in Alexa Plus or add these AI elements. The same thing, by the way, with Walmart and Vizio. But keep your eye on both of them because they, I think, are going to have a lot to say about how this era of interactive TV, this era of using TV is going to go.
That is fascinating. Yes, some of these tools are starting to get to be implemented in there, many of which I'm not presently utilizing, but I'm sure I will be as I go along here. And again, just always amazing to be able to keep up with what's happening with you, Simon Applebaum. Again, tomorrow will be televised. Excellent podcast that, again, as you said, you can catch live a couple of times a week. And of course, always on demand. The great column also tomorrow will be televised at Media Village. Simon, always a pleasure to have you on. And I'm already looking forward to the next time that we do this. Thank you so much for being here, my friend.
You got it, Rick. Always a pleasure. Let's do it soon. You take care.
Thank you, Simon. You too. Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1925.